Writing the Research Article, a Primer on Style. Hi, my name is Roger Graves. I'm the Director of Writing Across the Curriculum at the University of Alberta and Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning. Today I'm going to talk about academic writing style and specifically about the research article. One of the questions people often have about this is, can I use I in a research article? This is the kind of question that will often really stop somebody in their tracks, stump them, because they're not really sure how to phrase certain things, especially things like a main claim or the point you're making or arguing in a research article. So we'll talk about that and talk about a few other things related to it as we look at the kind of guidance that people are giving about how to write as an academic and whether or not we can treat those things as ironclad rules, which everybody would like. There's one rule and it's always true. Or whether you really need to understand these rules in the context of where you're publishing and what field you're in. So when we want to think about writing style for academic researchers, we need to think about the genre that you're publishing in, the kind of article you're writing, the journals you plan to send it to, and only then can we start thinking about the style that you should write it in, and specifically whether or not a particular journal specifies a kind of, say, referencing style. Does the journal require articles to be written in certain formats? It's an initial question you have to look at. Some of those constraints include things like structural constraints. Is it the introduction, methods, results, and discussion structure that they're after? Are they going to specify a reference style? APA, Vancouver, Chicago? There's all kinds of these. Some even specify the framing or the phrasing of the way your title reads. And many will have a word limit. In my own field, there's a journal called the Canadian Journal for the Study of Discourse and Writing. The requirements for it are very few and far between. It just says APA Handbook, 6th edition, 9,000 words, and there's just not a whole lot of other requirements, which is fantastic. I also published in a journal called Digital Studies, Le Champ Numérique, and in it, the requirements are extensive. They're several screens long. They cover everything from the font size to the style manual, Chicago in this case. And one of the things they identify early on is that there are a bunch of subgenres of article types, and you need to figure out which type of article you're writing or going to submit to them, and then follow the requirements for that type. Here's one other example of a journal that I've published in. This one is called ESP, or English for Specific Purposes. And now, the guidelines for the authors for that journal are 13 pages long. They publish that as a separate PDF or booklet. And there's a long, long list of things that they're specifying there. So my point in giving you these three examples is this. The style in which you write an article is very much dependent on the journal you're going to send it to. So before or as you're drafting your article, you need to be aware of, or at least have some idea of where you're going to be sending this manuscript. Given that, you can then answer some questions about writing style. To help you answer those questions, I created a Google Doc, which I'll post as a PDF on weekendwrite.ca. It's called Genres of Academic Writing, Style in the Research Article. And in that, I just give you a table and ask you a bunch of questions that you can ask of the journal that you're going to send it to. In addition to probing things like structural organization, are they specifying that, and who are the readers that you're writing for? Are they your peers or educated publics, that kind of thing? I also ask you a few questions about your context for writing, such as where are you in your career? What risks are you comfortable taking with your academic writing? And how soon do you need to see this manuscript in print? Your attitudes around your writing do also affect the choices you're going to make about style. In addition to the constraints that a particular journal is going to give to you for your writing, there's a couple other things to consider. One is gender. As an element of academic style, gender does not appear to be a key factor. It seems to be subsumed by the demands of academic writing style. That's taken from a study that was done on undergraduate student writers who are writing in an academic context, but I can see that as being true. A second sort of factor or variable is audience. I'm going to give you this quote from Joshua Rothman, who wrote, Why is Academic Writing So Academic? In The New Yorker, and he says this, "Increasingly, to build a successful academic career, you must serially impress very small groups of people, departmental colleagues, journal and book editors, tenure committees. Often, an academic writer is trying to fill a niche, but when it comes to their academic writing and to their research to underpin it, to the main activities, in other words, of academic life, They have no choice but to aim for very small targets. So what he's saying here is that who you're writing for, the audience, makes a big difference in the way in which you're going to write. Big question people often ask about the way in which they're writing is, how personal can I be? How much can I involve my personal life in my academic writing? That's a great question, and the answer, of course, is that it varies. But let's take as a test case an article that came across via Twitter for me called Dementia, Rhetorical Schemes, and Cognitive Resilience by Randy Harris at the University of Waterloo. He published this in PORI in January of this year, 2020. Randy is a full professor. He's published several books, and as far as I can tell, he has a very high standing in the field. So that's a little bit of background about him. Now let's take a look at his article. Here's a quote that is the first section right after the title and after the abstract when you see the article. Zero, two tales of resistance. I have a neighbor just into her 70s. She walks her dogs past my yard daily, and when she finds me puttering about, she infallibly asks with a mischievous grin, "Are you working hard or hardly working?" Same question every time. My neighbor is resisting the incursions of Alzheimer's disease, resisting the erosion of her memory and herself, and her armament includes rhetorical figures. Second tale. My father's early education was in a one-room schoolhouse in northern Canada with very limited resources. It was the Great Depression. Much of his learning was oral, with an emphasis on the memorization of narrative poetry. So that's that section that begins the piece, which is very personal. It tells two stories from his non-academic life. Now let's look at section one, the introduction, which follows the section that has those two stories in it. The introduction section starts this way. Rhetorical figures are neurocognitively motivated linguistic assemblages which achieve degrees of salience, memorability, and aesthetic pleasure by the way they recruit our biases for particular patterns and relationships. Their neurocognitive resonances enable figures to make specific collocations and constructions more resilient to the fragility of memory, individual and cultural, to the vagaries of attention, individual and cultural, to the presence of noise, internal and external, and to any combination of the above. That second quote, the section one, the introduction, sounds a lot more like what I would expect in academic writing. For example, there are 44 words in that second sentence. Now let's take a look at a 1991 article that he wrote in order to try to figure out, is this a personal thing? Is this personal to Randy Harris? Here's the opening from an article called Rhetoric of Science. Before we begin, please take another look at the title. In particular, please notice that open-ended and swollen though it is, it manages to avoid three words, one big, one mid-sized, and, in the most important sidestep of all, a potent little article. The title avoids prolegomenon, the big word, and towards, the mid-sized word, because both terms are far more hesitant than we need be about rhetorical investigations of science. Although the field is rather new, it has proven remarkably successful, and there are abundant signs of a healthy future. As for the stout little article, the epigram should indicate that it is missing because neither rhetoric nor science is stable enough to bear the immense burden of specificity that the definite article brings with it. Certainly, there is no such thing as the rhetoric of science. And so that ends that introduction. I think in this introduction, you can see both elements of a more personal voice in there. He says, before we begin, uses a kind of linguistic register, which is more informal, by using words like swollen, a little sidestep, potent little article, those kinds of things. In the paragraph after that, which goes like this, but there is carefully denuded of specificity, rhetoric of science. In fragmented form, it goes back as long as the two fields have existed, and it makes various appearances throughout the history of each. Aristotle, for instance, was a seminal contributor to both fields, and he occasionally speaks about them in the same breath, as when he says that dialectic and rhetoric are employed by the same sciences, but are not sciences themselves. And so he goes on in this way, and it becomes far more what I would call academic, what I would recognize as an academic research article. So what this really does is it raises some questions for us to consider. So when you're thinking about the way in which you're going to write, the academic style that you're going to take on, here are some things to think about. How much of style is attributable to the particular journal you're sending something to? Because it has a big influence. Now, how much of style comes from the author? How much is it Randy Harris being Randy Harris there? how much it depends on the fact that he's a full professor now, as opposed to when he was a graduate student or a postdoc. How much of your writing style in academic writing is a function of the subgenres within the journal? So your review articles often are more personal than, say, a research piece. How much does the complexity of the subject matter affect how difficult the material is? And here I'm thinking of some work I've been part of recently on the rhetoric of mathematics. Now, how much and which components of your style can vary? And that worksheet that I referenced earlier might give you some way into thinking about what those components are. And how much are disciplinary components? So when you get to mathematics articles, for example, and we published a piece in ESP about this, you would see there that there are disciplinary components, disciplinary values, which affect the way in which people write in that field. So in answer to a question we asked towards the start of this podcast, can I use the word I in this paper? I'm not so sure about that one. I don't see it that often, but I very often will see the word we. So here's an example. In this paper, we build on this new stream of research on when multimodal messages might more effectively persuade to theorize how combinations of images and words promote certain emotions and aid legitimacy work by more effectively capturing attention. So that's one example of where you use the locution we. Here's a second example. We would argue that identifying visual move associations at the micro-rhetorical level of argument is essential. I'll end this podcast with just mentioning five different other ways in which you as a person are present in your academic text. And the first one is hedges. You may say things like maybe, some, or often. You use words like that in order to hedge the claim that you're making. The second thing is boosters, and these are phrases like are clearly exaggerated, without question. So that's you boosting up the strength of an argument. A third is called attitude markers. So when you say something like, it is surprising, it's interesting to note. So you're giving an attitude, you're conveying your attitude to a certain thing. A fourth way in which you come into your own text is by what are called self-mentions. In my opinion, I think that, those kinds of things. And finally, there are what are called engagement markers, where you use words like we, you ask a question, you speak directly to the reader. So in using all of those techniques, you become more present in your academic text. Well, thanks for listening. My name is Roger Graves. I'm at the University of Alberta. You can reach me at graves1@ualberta.ca. This podcast is available at wecanwrite.ca, and the handout that goes associated with it and the slides that accompany it will also be there as well. Thanks for listening.